Welcome to the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Crystal Starr. This show is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Today, I talk with Executive Directors Greta Brunschweiler of the Millicent Rogers Museum and Juniper Manley of the Harwood Museum about the art, history, incorporation of the community, and future plans for both museums. My first guest, Greta Brunschweiler, has more than 20 years of experience working in museums. On her first visit to Taos, Brunschweiler and her mother fell in love with the exhibits and jewelry at the Millicent Rogers Museum. In January of this year, Brunschweiler left Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and joined the curators, staff, and volunteers of Millicent Rogers as their new executive director. Today, Brunschweiler shares with me what's new at Millicent Rogers and her vision and goal to make the museum a cornerstone for dialogue in Taos. Can you give us a little history and background about Millicent Rogers, who she was, and to her contributions to Taos?
Sure. So most people know her as a socialite and an heiress. But the really cool thing I've learned since I've been here for a little over 6 months is that Millicent was actually a great philanthropist. So she worked really closely with Taos Pueblo, trying to get health care, trying to get recognition, trying to sort of raise the status of the people there, because the government looked at Pueblo people and probably most Indian people at that time as numbers in census. So she worked with the government. They wouldn't provide financial support for the Indian Health Service, so she personally funded it. So that was just one of the things. And then, of course, she was a collector. She loved jewelry, something we're known for. She loved Native American arts, and she had a fantastic sense of design.
Design as in her personal style, or design in art design, furniture design, architectural design?
Okay, so all over the map. I would say she loved design sort of in any form, and it comes out. Actually, she was bedridden a lot of her life because she got really ill as a child, and it stuck with her whole life. Mm-hmm. And she designed a lot of jewelry, and she would sit in bed and create drawings and wax forms, and then she would have someone make them, and she would give the jewelry to her friends. But she also designed a house that here in Taos when she lived here during her 7 years. It was called Turtle Walk, and she had lots of artists come in, Native artists, to paint and create sculpture, and it's a fabulous place. There's images of it. It's owned privately now, but it's just a cool, cool place. But her design sense is in a lot of fashion magazines, and she would take styles from different countries and put them together in ways that socialites wouldn't have ordinarily done, because they would stick with the usual models.
The status quo.
Status quo. She was not a status quo lady, that's mm-hmm. for sure.
Have you all reopened your doors yet?
We have not. We've been doing a lot of maintenance projects, and that's great. But we are really looking forward to having people back in yet. But I hate to say it, I can't give you a date yet.
Yeah.
We've got some exhibits online, and we're doing an online talk with the Naranjos. Michael Naranjo is a sculptor from Santa Clara, and we installed a show of his. And it was supposed to open the day we were shut with COVID, March 17th, which was, you know, lovely.
Wow.
So we've been enjoying it.
Yeah. And so you've been having an online forum with him.
We're going to.
Yeah. Okay. That's something to look forward to.
It really is. He's a lovely man. He is this soft-spoken, wonderful, insightful sculptor who is just fantastic, self-taught. His mom was a sculptor, and he kind of learned from her. And
okay.
he's blind, but that's part of the story. But it makes his work, I think, a little more sensual. He uses his hands to remember the forms, and they're incredible. And we were going to have the show be a touchable show where we would have kids and especially seniors with low vision come in and put their hands all over these fabulous pieces, but you can enjoy them with your eyes as well.
It's kind of sad that it won't be able to be a hands-on thing.
It's heartbreaking to me, but we're talking about whether or not we can have programs where kids or and or adults can use clay and close their eyes if they are sighted and create things. And just, you know, the sensuality of the clay and the forms, that's a really wonderful experience.
So. Yeah, especially considering most times you go into museums, the whole thing is that you can't touch anything.
Right.
And that was pre-COVID.
We'd all like to kind of get away from those restrictions.
We eventually
will. We'll find our
keep
way.
Keep the faith.
Yep. We'll find our way.
Can you talk to me a little bit, and to our audience, I shouldn't just say me, but can you talk a little bit about the Millicent Rogers Writer's Corner and the library?
Okay, sure. There are so many people who are sort of fascinated or taken with Millicent and her life that we've had all these people approach us with writing that they've done, and there have been many books written about her, and there's always articles. We're always coming across things. So we wanted to provide a forum for people to be able to express their feelings and their connection with Millicent. So we just started this. It's called The Writer's Corner. It's on our website. We've just got a few entries so far, and it's something that we would welcome all of you out there to submit your writings to us, because there's just this woman who's portrayed often as a singularly dimensional fashionista woman, was multi-dimensional and incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is sort of a homage. Right.
Right. And we all love hearing what the community has to say and what their feelings about whatever we're presenting are, because we feel like the community is our curator in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Do you want to talk a little bit more about some things that you have up and coming, accessible programs or for the public right now, since considering your doors are not open?
We've got this Michael Naranjo piece coming up, and we're going to kind of see how that goes. We've been doing a lot of things. We have a YouTube channel. We've been doing presentations on various parts of the exhibits, and they're tied to, for example, the Fiesta or Holy Week. We've certainly got a lot of things that reflect that. So we've been sort of tying these videos and explanations for the public to those items. But so typically we do a Taos Pueblo Arts Showcase, TPAWS, Winter Showcase. And again, COVID knocked that out. And we have a close relationship with the Pueblo, and we want to maintain that and help those folks who have no other way of earning an income, because the Pueblo is closed. Many of you know there's some COVID there. So things are really, really tightened down, and it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
So we came up with the idea of a virtual show, and a lot of people are kind of hesitant because they've never done it before. So that's coming up, and we've been watching the artwork come in the door, and there's some really great things. So that's something that we're doing in support of our partners, and hopefully you guys can get on and check that out. It's going to be on our website.
So it's on the Millicent Rogers website, but then you also have a link to your YouTube channel where people can see. Well, did you say you had a YouTube channel?
Yeah, we have. So those are kind of two different things. The Pueblo show is going to be on our website, and we're going to run it through our website. Mm-hmm. And the presentations will be through our website. We're trying to figure out the live streaming for that. But we do have a YouTube channel where we park our presentations that we've done on specific topics.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that link is on the website?
Yeah.
To get to the YouTube channel?
Yes. And then in the fall, later on in the fall, Thanksgiving weekend, we're doing a Southwest art show that amalgamates the cultures of the area and tries to help all those folks present their works for sale. Because again, we're hearing from these artists who are just having a tough time. And we had an online auction recently that was really successful as a fundraiser to the museum to sort of backfill lost time and fees that support the museum. And it was successful. So we want to just go out there.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
that's really great. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome staff. And
I was going to say, you've only been here 6 months, and it seems like, you know, the majority of that was in quarantine. But it sounds like you have a staff who really supports you and believes in the museum and making things happen. Do you want
to? I would love to talk about it.
Yeah.
Thank you for that opening gambit. The staff at the Millicent Rogers is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. These folks, okay, so here comes this woman they've never met before. She comes in January, and then, you know, we're starting to get to know each other, starting to figure out our patterns and, you know, how we're going to work together and accomplish our goals. And then COVID comes. Okay, so this can either be an opportunity or it can just shut you down, because I know people are still scared, but we're really, really scared in the beginning. They're going to get sick. Their family members are going to get sick. They're going to lose their jobs. And fortunately, none of that happened, because we just were able to pull together and create this fantastic synergy. And these folks rock. I mean, their ideas are legion. And if we could do them all, yeah, it would be awesome. It's just a small staff. And then there's been a couple board members who have been really instrumental in making things happen. So I feel really personally really lucky that I've fallen into this little nest of wonderful people, and I love Taos. The community is so welcoming, and the museum directors here are so welcoming. They've been fantastic to me. Everybody I've met, I think, is always trying to help one another, and what a wonderful community spirit. So
yeah,
it's pretty great, and the museum is all the things that I love.
So what are some of your future goals? I mean, you've been here 6 months. You're working on trying to get it opened up. You've got exhibits lined up. What are some things that you're looking forward to as the executive director of the museum once things sort of loosen up on regulations?
And I can see people again in the museum.
Yeah.
Well, I really want to make it a stronger cornerstone in the community. And I see so much richness here again in the content that we could provide to tourists to bring in revenue, but also creating dialogue within the community, because I've learned a little bit about some rifts and controversies that have been here. I mean, some of them are centuries old, of course, with the history here. But I would love for us to be a center for dialogue and a place where people can sort of have an aha moment and have empathy for someone that's different from them, and appreciate the sense of community here, because this is such a wonderful place and so rich in its cultures coming together. And I want to be able to tell that story together. That's maybe kind of it's a huge goal, but we're really going to focus. We're working on honing our exhibition schedule. We've got the next year or so in place, but we're trying to hone it so that we are always talking about the influences that everyone has on each other and how culture is fluid. It doesn't stop. You can't put anyone in a box. And I think that's an important message.
Yeah, it is. The goal is to really reach out to the community, it sounds like, and give the community voice and visibility through the museum, which is something that I think Millicent Rogers would definitely be proud of you for.
Well said. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I just think there's... When I ask people, when I was able to really talk to more people when I came here, I would ask, what do you think about the Millicent, or what do you know about it? And a lot of people said, well, yeah, I went there. And I really would like to welcome you back. And I want to see you there. And I want you to talk to me and tell me what you want, and tell us, the staff and the board of trustees, what you want, because we can't do it unless we hear your voices. So that's really, really important. And it's hard. People don't know me. I'm new to Taos. This is a really genuine request that people get in touch and let us know who we should be to the community.
So we can get the Greta hotline number?
The Greta hotline number, yeah. The Greta hotline number, Greta, G-R-E-T, 1-T, just like Greta Garbo, at MillicentRogers.org.
Yeah.
And I love talking to people in the community. And we've got so many supporters and so many wonderful volunteers. And we need to work those in together and just make the museum a stronger place for everyone. And that's what I would like to say. Talk to me.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right.
That was my conversation with Greta Brunschweiler, Executive Director of the Millicent Rogers Museum here in Taos, New Mexico. When we come back, I talk with Executive Director of the Harwood Museum of Art, Juniper Manley. Welcome back to the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. I'm Crystal Starr. Before the break, we heard the song Breathe by Annalise Cherie from the album Genetic World, a revision produced by Charlie Scoville. Charlie is from Los Angeles, California, and works as a producer and composer of funky electronic music that incorporates chill vibes and hip-hop melodies for any mood. My next guest, Juniper Manley, grew up in Peñasco, New Mexico, and attended Taos High School. Manley holds a master's degree in arts management from the Carnegie Mellon Heinz School of Public Policy and Management, along with a bachelor's degree in anthropology from Reed College. Before becoming the executive director of the Harwood Museum of Art, Manley served as the museum's director of development from 2008 to 2016. In our first segment, Juniper shares with me how the Harwood works to preserve the art of Taos history, platform local artists, and the museum's dedication to maintaining art and art history in Taos public schools. How does the Harwood Museum work with other institutions to create visibility and accessibility within the Taos community?
I mean, we've worked with a number of institutions. I think it's a place where we can expand. Primarily, it's through the schools, and our Art in the Schools program is kind of the biggest access point where we reach into the lower income and the individuals who may not otherwise come into the museum. We also, you know, I institution-wise, when you ask that, it's interesting because we don't have a lot of collaborations with other institutions right now, but I think there's room for that. I'm working right now with a group of cultural institutions, museums, and otherwise. 516 Arts in Albuquerque is heading it up, and it ranges from Pueblo all the way down to Mexico. And we're looking at regional collaborations. Kind of, we're all working with a similar interest in, you know, how does a cultural institution break down some of the habits of where we come from as museums, and working collaboratively in this region in a different way. So, you know, so we're working on some bigger collaborations that I hope will show in this community. As far as access, I'd say the largest thing that we do is make sure that Taos, the Harwood's free to locals on Sunday. And of course, artists. Right now we have our exhibitions that have 45 artists involved. And each of those artists, we have given a membership and trying to encourage the community to come in that way. Other areas where we collaborate, I don't know if it really speaks to access, but we house the Taos Municipal School Art Collection on a 99-year loan. So that work was housed in closets in the school, basically. And there's Agnes Martin's in there. There's amazing pieces. Dorothy Brett's. There's Patrocinio Barella. These are pieces that were gifted to the schools, were on the walls of the schools. They started to disappear. There was water damage, and one of our former curators discovered this, and through a long process with the school board, we basically offered, once we had our new collection storage area, to house that work in a climate-controlled environment. So that's one piece that we've done just to protect that artwork. And then we also house the Taos Pueblos archives around Blue Lake. So it's the 50th anniversary of Blue Lake. This was a similar situation where a decade ago, it was their 40th anniversary. They were installing the works, I believe, at the Kachina Lodge. And we realized that they really didn't have a safe place to keep these records. So again, in collaboration with the Pueblo, we offered to house those records at the Harwood in our climate controlled area. And of course, no one has access to those except for the Pueblo or with Pueblo permission. But
that seems like a lot, Juniper. Is it a situation where you all reach out to institutions that have historical artifacts that are not being protected, or are institutions jumping at the opportunity to house their artifacts with an institution such as the Harwood Museum, where they know these things can be protected and preserved?
We made those offers at the beginning of our expansion, which was in 2010. I'll say now we really have very little room left. And also these are loans. So it's not that those works, the school collection or the archives, are gifted to us. We do not own them. We are housing them. They are on a loan agreement. And it's not too complicated per se. It's just that as people change, directors change, governors change, that information needs to stay current. So, but it's, right now, the majority of our collection is built on gifts. We have 6,500 works, more than that actually, in our permanent collection. And the majority of those are through gifts. We, we're at the point now where oh my gosh, we don't have any more room for. So it's about, can we take care of our collection? Can we display our collection? Can we share our collection with other exhibitions?
I know this would be hard for you to answer just off the top of your head, but do you have a favorite collection or piece of work that's currently up in the Harwood right now?
I think it's always hard. I'm going to speak to one that I just I was glad to see up again. And that's our new curator just refreshed the Moderns Gallery and some beautiful pieces in there. And there's a Florence Pierce up. And I don't know if you know Florence Pierce, but she became quite recognized as a woman artist. She was part of the transcendental movement, so working with light. And this piece is it has the color scheme of a subdued Agnes Martin. It's kind of like a clamshell with two semicircles coming together and rays. But then she's covered the surface with resin, and that she does this frequently. So you capture light. So it's kind of a mix of Agnes Martin and then this other layering and surface that she builds that makes it really luminous. So I love Florence Pierce's work, and I was just very pleased to see that again.
Can you talk a little bit about the current exhibit that is up in the Harwood? I'm speaking to, you all did a call for local artists. I haven't had a chance to get into the Harwood to see it yet, but could you talk to us a little bit about that exhibit and what went into making that exhibit come to life?
Well, you're speaking of the Contemporary Art Tiles exhibition. So the Contemporary Art Tiles exhibition is a juried exhibition, put a call out in January, and we had about 313 applicants, and our panel, there's 24 artists that were selected in the exhibition right now. Our panel did not know who was who in Taos. So we made sure that it was a blind in that way. So we had Douglas Dreispoon, who is the curator emeritus of the Albright Knox in Buffalo, New York. He's also the director of the Helene Frankenthaler Resonance in New York, in that foundation. And he's curated Ken Price shows. He knows Taos, but from afar. So he was invited to be a juror, as well as Dakota Hauska, who is associate Native American arts curator from the Denver Art Museum. And then our curator, Nicole Dial Kay, had just come on board. So she didn't know who was who. And this was really her introduction to the Taos art community. And so from a process of kind of looking through the digital applications of 313 artists, they honed it down to 50 that they really went in more depth, and then down to 30. And Nicole did virtual studio tours since COVID had hit with those artists, trying to, you know, identify the works that would be shown, or if there was certain works that would be created custom for the space, etc. So the result of that process is basically what you see in the museum. And as I mentioned, there's 24 artists that were selected. The downstairs galleries that aren't our permanent collection galleries are installed with that work. So there's really a great diversity of mediums in it. There's felting by Nina Silfverberg. There's video art. There's an installation kind of experience piece by Sasha Van Dorp. There's two ceiling to floor installations, one by Izumi Yokoyama and the other one by Lynette Hausus. And she's probably the youngest artist in the exhibition. She just graduated from IAIA, which is the Institute of American Indian Arts. And she grew up on Taos Pueblo. So there's a real diversity. We have Patricia Michaels, this beautiful garment. I mean, it's a whole outfit that's created by Patricia Michaels, hand-painted, of course. And it is a tribute to Blue Lake, because this year is the 50th anniversary mm-hmm. of Blue Lake. And this hand-painted cape on it that just looks like water, and it's just stunning.
That sounds stunning. I'm really looking forward to making my way over there to see this exhibit. So you reach out to local artists to platform their work. What other kind of work do you do? I guess I'm speaking in particular to youth programs or working with any of the local schools and educating and informing our students about art and art history.
So we've had a very dedicated youth program partnership with the schools called Art in the Schools, although truly it's the students coming to the museum for the most part. And that program is in its 15th year. It has been that the students either, often, we have worked primarily with Enos Garcia, although as our primary partner, but there was 9 schools that participated mm-hmm. last year and in prior years, but pretty much every kid from Enos Garcia, pre-K through 5th, has come to the Harwood at least quarterly for years. So they come, walk to the museum, they they spend about 45 minutes in the galleries experiencing the artwork, talking about a particular subject, then going back to our education center, our studio space, and doing a hands-on project that then they take home and or put up in their school. So it's both in museum and also hands-on. With COVID, we've really we looked at ways. We really assessed trying to convert that to a online platform. One of the teacher's aide and myself interviewed a number of principals to kind of see what would work. I know schools are scrambling right now to figure out how to even transition to just getting the core curriculum done. So we knew our program could not be any extra work for teachers. It needed to support and supplement what was already being done. And just with all the flux and not being able to actually open and be in the space by state mandate, we put that on hold. So we'll be reassessing that in January. And we are doing a strategic planning. So really looking at how do we make that partnership more robust. There's a lot of community school effort going on in our community. There's four different community schools. It's a platform that's a little bit different than school. It's about kind of connecting the students to a full array of social services and other supports so that they can be a successful student. So it's a much more family and whole child approach. And there's four schools in our region that are taking on that model, I'd say. And so, you know, figuring out how the Harwood can support that and be a partner. So we're really reevaluating what our education program will be as we reemerge out of COVID.
That was part one of my conversation with the Harwood Museum's executive director, Juniper Manley. After the break, our conversation continues with a little history and the efforts of Manley and her team to keep the Harwood accessible to the community. Welcome back to the TCA Radio Hour. I'm Crystal Starr. Before the break, I was speaking with the Harwood Museum of Arts Executive Director, Juniper Manley, about the museum's efforts to preserve and support art here in Taos. We continue our conversation with a look back at the museum's initial phase as Taos's first public library and how Manley and her dedicated team have adjusted their vision under the restrictions of COVID to keep art visible and accessible for the locals and visitors to Taos.
You probably have a long list of answers to this next question, but what are some of the challenges that you faced as executive director of a museum in a small community? I mean, I'm sure that there is a pre-COVID and post-COVID list of challenges, but how you and your team have persevered these challenges and turned them into success stories?
The COVID's been a very interesting challenge. I can't, you know, I like challenges, so I, so I mean, not that I'd wish a pandemic upon any of us, but it's like, okay, this is what we got to work with. So how do you make the best of it? You know, I think it's been really interesting to navigate. It really requires quick shifting of gears. It requires flexibility. It requires a lot of learning in new technology platforms, learning how to collaborate remotely, et cetera. I think the biggest kind of reward has been watching my team come together and figure out how to pivot everything, right? So, I mean, we're a museum. We're addicted to the object. We're addicted to the artwork being in a space, and we have neither, right? Now we have to provide this all virtually through a digital platform. And for some people, the reason they work in museums is because they like that physical world. So it's not necessarily an easy adjustment for people who choose the museum world. Yeah. But it's been great. You know, we've all jumped on Zoom. We meet frequently. We are, you know, collaborating a lot. People have taken on new roles. They've learned new technology. They've researched and figured out how to, you know, do Facebook Live and how to do, you know, how to do all kinds of things. You know, my curator came on board, Nicole Dial K came on board mid-February, brand new to Taos and brand new to the Harwood, and then gets hit with COVID basically middle of March, right? So 1 month on the ground. This summer we were supposed to have a big Blue Lake exhibition in collaboration with the Pueblo. The Pueblo decided to cancel all its Blue Lake events. We had to cancel all our winter exhibitions. So literally, we had a collaboration with UNM Taos for their graduate students. So we had all these plans, and like daily things would just start shifting underneath us. And we were joking. We're like, we're past plan Z by now. We're like, you know, figuring out, you know, things are starting to settle, but, you know, we just stopped putting dates up. We were just like, screw this. So there's no more dates to... It required just a tremendous amount of problem solving and flexibility. So I'd say that's been one of the most amazing things to see how my team comes together to deal with those challenges. One of the other silver linings is we've canceled a lot of shows. We are now on, when I came on board, the next exhibition was not planned. I came in during Judy Chicago, and there was not a plan for a future exhibition. So, and I didn't have a curator shortly after that. So it was a wing it kind of situation. You know, the last year, I started it last May. So a year of kind of not having the time to plan, having Nicole on board and having this time to kind of sit back. We're now have a 2023 schedule fleshed out and, you know, object lists and exhibitions that are at least in the substantive space. So that's a pretty big accomplishment for 6 months with a new curator, is to not only put up what's on the walls, but also plan for 3 years in advance.
Which leads me to my next question, which is, what are some of the future plans or things that we can look forward to at the Harwood Museum?
So we're really focusing on the next 3 years. It's pretty standard for a museum to try and have at least 3 years out. If you're going to fundraise for anything of significance, you need 3 to 5 years to really raise adequate funds. You know, otherwise we're always chasing our tail. So like the Mabel Dodge Lujan project that we did, that was 6 years in the making. Big exhibitions take a lot of work and advance planning, especially if we're going to get money from outside of Taos, which is always our goal, is, you know, let's get the big grants, let's get the loose grants, the IMLS, the bring in money from outside, which to me, that's economic stimulus, you know. But to do that, you need that long range planning. The 2023 is our centennial of the founding of the Harwood Foundation. So that's a big milestone for us. We're working on strategic planning for the 3 years to culminate at that time. So a lot is in play. And yeah, so we don't really have anything, you know, we have ideas. I mean, it's really a kind of amazing to be a museum. We really only have, what, 5 changing galleries? And some of those usually support another exhibition. So we really can only have 3 changing exhibitions a year. So that fills up fast with the talent that we have in Taos, both the talent from our history, because, I mean, the Harwood has been around since Lucy and Bert Harwood came here in 1916. We've kind of evolved with that art history, and we tell the history, the story from you know, we like to pendulum to contemporary, but we also have a responsibility to also highlight the last century. So that schedule fills up quickly. The last contemporary call for artists was actually in 2003. So it's been, I felt like it was definitely overdue. But in the next, you know, few years, we won't do a big call to artists. Maybe once every 5 years or every decade, I'm not sure. You know, I think we always strive to, I think one of the roles of the museum is to be a catalyst for an artist that's really shown their strength and have the museum be a, you know, kind of push them. So, I mean, for like Pulver's work, we've extended that exhibition. It's up. It was supposed to come down, but that is going to be extended. But his beautiful spiral journey in the middle of the floor, like that piece is bigger than he's ever done. It was more, it was harder to craft than other pieces he's done. There's the museum space can provide an opportunity for the evolution of that artist. You know, we do have throughout our schedule group shows, historic shows, and solo shows and the like. But so we always have, you know, a responsibility to show Tao's artists, but we don't have the schedule or the room to show every good Tao's artist.
So you've spoken about some of the history of the Harwood Museum and its founders. I know one of the things that fascinated me most about the Harwood was the fact that it once was the original library for Taos. But can you talk to us about the Harwood Museum as it was a library prior to becoming a museum?
So yeah, the Harwood Public Library was what it was called when I was a kid. I grew up, you know, sitting on the, going to the children's library and then spent many hours in the adult library. So for those who don't know, the left-hand, you know, the what the education center is now was the children's library. And the John Gaumeem addition, where the majority of the historic galleries are, that was the primary library. Where the Agnes Martin Gallery is, that was a reading porch. And it was, you know, was where I hung out after school to read and wait for rides. It was where all the homeless characters in town used to sit and read the paper and the like. And the reason that the library evolved, which I kind of love this, is, you know, Lucy Harwood, it shows her generous spirit, is as soon as they came to town, she recognized that the town did not have a public library and to loan her own books off her porch. And then when, after, they were always a center for the arts in Taos. There was artists there, they had little casitas and artists would come and visit and stay there. So they were always a little center. But then in 1922, when she created the Harwood Foundation, it was important that there was this library component to it. She brought the first bookmobile to Taos. Mabel Dodge Lujan would buy books weekly from New York. And if you go to the Taos Public Library now, you'll notice Gift of Mabel Dodge Lujan Harwood Public Library in a lot of those books. So if you go to the library, you can see that little piece of our history. You know, so, I mean, up till 1993, the Harwood housed Taos's library. I'm not sure exactly what happened at that moment, but, you know, as part of UNM, I think there was like a question. And like, why are we running Taos's library? So, you know, I mean, yeah. It gave much financial support, but there was this moment of, wait a minute, should we be doing this? So at that point is when they brought Robert Ellis, out of retirement to kind of figure out what to do with the Harwood, this entity of UNM, what I refer to it as the redheaded stepchild. But all those books went to the public library. So the town built the current library and all those books moved to Southwest Research Center, which is housed at Clower Campus, took the research books, and that opened up this space for being a museum. And Bob Ellis, really from working at national museums and being part of the UNM faculty and director of the UNM Art Museum for years, kind of knew how to navigate this. And he befriended Agnes Martin and really slowly evolved the public library, which really was up till 1991, 2, 3 or so, into the museum that you now see, to being really an international destination. So we have this like remnant of Harwood's generosity in this community space but it's evolved, and it's probably become even more than what Lucy had imagined.
I'm sure that is such a fascinating little piece of history about the hardwood. Out of curiosity, is there anything, does anything still remain at the Hardwood Museum now that was once a part of the original library? I guess, books or furniture or anything that a person who visits the museum wouldn't know, the unsuspecting eye.
Residual is, you know, I think the piece that shows, if you go in upstairs or on the stairway, you'll see the WPA chairs, that the little tiny chairs and the mid-sized chairs. The WPA chairs were in the children's library, and the other ones, because we were a WPA workshop in the 30s. So like those were in, the furniture was in the library. You know, if you walked in, if you see old photos of the Harwood library, that Victor Higgins is above the fireplace, just like it is now. There was Patrocinio Borella's on the shelves of the library. So yeah, the books are gone, but there's still the element and the, you know, one thing that I think is people don't know is that funny stairway upstairs in the Hispanic traditions that goes nowhere. That was a stage. So there was a stage there. And the other part, which is now where Dean's work is, the Martin Gallery, that was the audience and the gallery space.
So I'm sure, not to get back on the challenges, but I'm sure that it has been an interesting ride figuring out how to keep the hardwood visible and accessible to the community and to folks who are not necessarily venturing back out for non-essential activities. What have you all done to create a more accessible museum for folks who are not leaving their homes right now?
Yeah, so we had virtual openings where people could interact. So we've done Zoom events. We are not having any in-person events right now. The interviews don't have a Q&A component at the moment, and we've moved to a platform where our curator is in the museum with the piece, and then we're having the artist visit from their studio, basically virtually. So there's no contact.
Wow.
And, so it's an interesting to try to figure out how to use these platforms to share more information. And I just want to say that, you know, if you're not comfortable going in the museum yet, because I know some people are sensitive to that, a lot of we pivoted everything online. So there's if you go to our website, it'll actually jump off to a secondary site, harwoodart.org, and we've made a feature page for each of the 45 artists that are in our exhibitions, the Las Santeras exhibition, which features 21 artists. That it's really the first time that these women artists working in the Santos tradition have been shown together. In the majority, there's a few, some of the Cordova carvers have passed, but other than that, they're all living and working today, as well as contemporary art towels. So since we couldn't show you the art as much, we really worked on trying to elevate the artists. So you'll see features on each of these artists, as well as a walkthrough of each exhibition that you can access right on those page. It jumps to YouTube. And then we have interviews with those artists, with both the Contemporary Art House and Santeras exhibitions, that are available on our Facebook page and also on their website pages.
You've been listening to my conversations with Taos Museum directors Greta Brunschweiler at the Millicent Rogers Museum and Juniper Manley at the Harwood Museum of Art. This has been the Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour. Share this broadcast with friends and family by going to tcataos.org. The Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour is brought to you in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, Exploring the Human Endeavor. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. And thank you to our local business partner, Phoenix Mechanical, and to KNCE 93.5 FM streaming live at truetaosradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Crystal Starr, and on the way out, here's another track from Charlie Scoville's album, Black Opal.